Okay, so today I will give a journal club talk on the recent paper by Gaiotto, Guica, Huang, Simons, Strominger, and Yin, where a Kuiper gauge theory appeared in a rather different context from what we've been discussing. That is, in the Kento, so we've been discussing in ADS-CFT, but this is a bit different. Hopefully, we might hope that there is some connection. Okay, so the basic here is the setup. So we consider type 2A string theory on quintic, which I call X, and we wrap N D4 brains around the surface, hypersurface. And also we place M D0 brains on the quintic. And this system gives a four-dimensional black hole. And there is an interest in counting the BPS states of this black hole. Yes?
So this is a real black hole, extremal black hole with a non-zero area horizon?
Yes, non-zero area horizon, BPS.
So normally that requires four charges.
Okay. D4, D0. Okay. There are induced charges. So there are D2 charges. There is a D2 charge induced.
Yeah,
very soon. Okay. Well, basically, yeah. So there is a magnetic charge coming from the D4 brain, and there are electric charges coming from the D0 brain, and also electric D2 charge induced on the world volume from the Chan-Simons coupling. Is that enough?
Electric
D2 charge, magnetic D4 charge. Magnetic. Three charges is not enough.
Can people count the entropy of sort of two charge system, and even though the black hole has zero energy, so there's not one force. So can you see? So because you have the same energy by the end.
You need four charges?
In four dimensions, a black hole in four dimensions requires four charges.
Four charges. They don't write down the metric.
Okay.
Yeah, it can have a safe intersection. Okay. Okay. So the proposal of the paper. So the proposal of the paper is that the quantum mechanics of the black hole is described by a certain quivergate theory, which I will talk about soon. So this quivergate theory is a quantum mechanics, so it's a dimensional reduction to 0 plus 1 dimensions over usual four-dimensional quivergate theory. And they show that the moduli space of the quantum mechanics agrees with the moduli space of hypersurfaces. Well, moduli space of hypersurface plus some symmetric product corresponding to the moduli space for the D0 brain. Moduli space. And this moduli space can be used to compute the entropy, that is, by quantizing this moduli space, one can count the number of BPS states, and that gives you the entropy of the black hole. Okay, so now I already described this quivergate theory. Here? So it's like there is a moduli space of a hypersurface, and the D0 moduli space is just a symmetric product of the hypersurface itself, so it's fibered over the moduli space of hypersurface. I'm considering the Higgs branch, so that is turning on the FI parameter. So I'm focusing on that branch. Yeah, there may be other branches too. They mentioned that. Okay. So gauge theory. So first I consider just placing D4 brains. And this D4 brain, each of them wrapping particular hypersurface, which is given by a linear equation. So phi A is a constant, ZA is a homogeneous coordinate of K4. And this is so and x is the quintic. And the proposal is that the system is described by the following gauge theory. So gauge group is UN, and there's gauge multiplet corresponding to this, and there are adjoint fields. There are UN adjoint fields corresponding to the motion of the hypersurface. So I will promote this coefficient phi sub a into matrices, so large phi sub A, and because rescaling of the constant doesn't change the hypersurface, these fields are subject to equivalence relation. And the rescaling is now promoted to general linear transformation. This is 0 plus 1. Mm-hmm. One plus zero. Just quantum mechanics. It's quantum mechanics.
And you're suppressing, of course, the
three transformation. Suppressing, well, that. Yeah. Okay, so because of this equivalence relation, I can work on the patch where phi five is the identity matrix. Okay. And there is a D-term constraint for the phi fields, which takes the form. So this is a usual D-term constraint for adjoint field, and here GAB Kähler matrix whose explicit form we don't know, but it doesn't really matter because we can describe the moduli space of this gauge theory in terms of holomorphic quotient. That is, we have this transform. Yeah. No, sorry. We have gauge transformation. We have gauge equivalence. This and this. So by combining the gauge equivalence with the D-term constraint, so this is equivalent to, this is equivalent with, where G is GLNC transformation. So here G was in the UN.
So those five APs are now outcomes of that, which are sorted of the spacing values of the scalar of scalar matrices with the identical spacing?
Yes.
Basically, they
characterize the position. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, so phi A corresponds to the position of the default grains.
And you choose the
kind
of gauge by setting phi 5 to be 1?
Yeah, so this is not really gauge transformation. Okay. Yeah, but. Yeah, there is complex rescaling. So. Yeah, I'm working in the part where phi y is 1. Yeah, right. The phi sub A can be naturally thought of as a coordinate in the projective space, the dual projective.
So is it clear how to extend the action, the complex scaling from one parameter?
No, I don't think it's clear. So this is a proposal. So yeah, after setting phi 5 to 1, a goes from 1, 2, 5. Yeah, A was originally, right. Yeah. Well, symmetric product arises after we introduce disturbance. This gauge theory, as I described, is just for defogrance.
Yeah, but you still characterize it by an adjoint field.
Yes.
And you do rescaling. You are kind of choosing the rescaling such that phi phi would be the identity. So you are actually putting many constraints, n different constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm confused about, how many degrees of freedom you have for the constraints. Because typically when you describe the hypersurface, you describe it as one equation and when you do the complex rescaling, you set only one variable. So it seems like you choose phi phi to be one.
Yes.
So back in the old days, when you consider compactifications on, say, the 6 forest or even K3 cross T2,
yes,
there was an understanding of where the microstates of the 4-dimensional mm-hmm. black hole came from in terms of some gauge
yes.
arising from that. So is the point here is that this is now a generalization of that to the case where you don't have a torus factor or something that you're just compactifying on a Clavial?
Yes. And actually, in the 90s, also the microstate for this same system was also the microstate for this same system were also counted using M theory. Hmm? Yeah, Maldacena, Sturm, Inge, and also there's another way of counting BPS state by Waffa. So the entropy for this system was already counted, actually. So what's new here is that the quantum mechanics is now described by this Cuivre gauge theory. So the new thing about this paper is that they introduce a Cuivre gauge theory that produces the moduli, the right moduli space, and this moduli space gives you the entropy
so the
by conservation.
This is now telling us what the interactions are between those states.
Written. Yes. Yeah, 1+1 dimensional conformal field theory. Yes. Yeah, but around the same time, there is a paper by Waffa, who computed the entropy just using type 2A in terms of disturbance. So they don't determine it.
So G is a function of the
Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. So this D-term constant is here used just to obtain the moduli space. So the moduli space just this. These are not constant. Okay. These are not constant. The functional matrix, so there is an ordering ambiguity. This is just D term for the UN gauge symmetry. No, not yet.
This is
for
sigma model on P4.
Yeah, sigma model on P4, yes. Yeah, that's right. By introducing another U1. Okay, yeah, if you introduce another U1 to impose the, to have P4, yeah, GAB might be constant. Okay, but yeah, they don't specify what the metric is in this case. What I'm saying is that this term constant. So okay, but this is a new. I think this is a general statement that is imposing the D-term constraint and also you know, requiring gauge symmetry can be traded with complex gauge transformation. So the moduli space of this. Okay, of this quantum mechanics is described by by this equation, by this equivalence ratio, and the number of moduli now you can do the counting of the moduli. So that is, so here A goes from 1 to 5. So there are 5 N squared, but there is one GLNC transformation, and there is another GLNC transformation, but the rescaling part of GLNC is trivial. So there is N squared minus 1. So the number of moduli is 3n squared plus
1. What is this minus
1? So if G is a constant matrix, If this is proportional to the identity matrix, this is trivial.
So it's SLA.
Yeah. Yeah. Effectively, this is SL. Well, because phi is in the adjoint. Okay. So this is a gauge theory for D4 brain, and now I'm going to add one D0 brain. Then the gauge group changes to UN to UN cross U1. So this is the number of moduli. For the moduli space of the gauge theory for ND4 brains.
So the idea is that you take you count the number of scalars that you have, the number of parallel multipliers. You have 5 adjoint fields. Before you do the
5 D4 brains on Quinty. On the hypersets. So the Quinty condition is going to is imposed on ZA, not phi A.
But you didn't, I thought that you didn't use that, and then you were
doing the other one. Yeah, so I didn't use that. So now I'm going to introduce D0 brain, and then I will impose the Quinty condition by Lagrange multiplier. Yes.
Each complex dimension has n squared degrees of freedom corresponding to this adjoint degree of freedom. That's how they do the calculus. So you start with 5 different adjoint degrees, which characterize the position of the hypersurface. You do one complex group, so you reduce the n squared, and then you divide by the gauge, and you have to reduce an additional one.
So this counting is clear or not? It's not clear? You don't understand the counting, or you don't understand the gauge theory? I'm counting the number of moduli
of the
ground state, the number of moduli of the moduli state.
Hypersurface, so you have basically a normal direction.
Mm-hmm.
Normal direction can point anywhere in this three-dimensional complex space. So that mm-hmm. basically gives you your. So you're counting basically the number of hypersurfaces in this very complex dimensional space. Yeah. So you have a two-complex dimensional hypersurface in a three-complex dimensional.
Oh, okay. So I think. I think this will become, once I describe the geometry of the D4 brains. They argue that the world volume of the D4 brain becomes.
So the dimension is 3, right? Because you are given 5 constants, there is
one loop closure, and then there is the overall complex projection, which becomes the view space view.
Okay, so later I will describe the world volume of the bound state of ND4 brains. And then they argue that the world volume is described by this equation, where phi A is again N by N matrix. Then this equation is invariant under this transformation and also this transformation. And then the counting of the moduli for this hypersurface is the same as the counting of the number of moduli for the gauge theory. Okay. Yeah, ZA is a point on the quintic, but here the gauge theory does not involve ZA, okay? The gauge theory involves only phi A. Yeah, where the hypersurface is. So this one. Okay, so this GLNC comes from this UN.
That is not to be counted as a part of the moduli.
Yes, the projective space and the hypersurface. Because you have a hypersurface, you need the moduli.
Oh,
that's what you want to
know. Yeah. Yeah, so this UN is not for the projective space, okay? This UN comes from the fact that these phis are the positions of the D4 brains, so they are in the adjoint of the... okay, so yeah, I'll come to that once I introduce D0 brain, because this comes about as from the probe brain. Probe brain analysis. Okay, so now I'm going to add one D0 brain, okay, and again, the proposal is that the system is described by this gauge theory, UN cross U1, and we have the same UN adjoint fields subject to this equivalence relation. We have the same D-term constraint, but we have additional fields and additional constraints and additional superpotential. So there are bifundamentals. Phi04 and phi40. So these come from 04 and 40 strings, and they are charged accordingly. And there are chiral superfields which describe the position of the zero brain. So now I'm promoting the coordinate of the projective space to chiral superfields. And again, because we have this equivalence relation, I can work in the Z5 equals one patch. And there is a superpotential. W equals phi04 phi A 540 VA, and plus that's this Lagrange multiplier term. So lambda is again a chiral superfield. Which plays the role of the Lagrange multiplier, and U of ZA is a polynomial, defining polynomial for the quintic, X quintic. The Chern-Simons coupling for the Ramon-Ramon 3 form gives gives a U1 Petri-Lyapunov term, and there is a D-term constraint for the bifundamentals. Which takes the form phi dagger phi dagger phi phi n zeta, and now we'll concentrate on the branch where this phi parameter is non-zero, and then what this D-term constraint tells you is that either 540 or 504 is non-zero. And now we want to extremize the superpotential with respect to all the chiral superfields. And for example, take derivative with respect to 504, and this part must vanish. So this has could this has to be twice. So this part has to vanish. And if, for example, 540, so if, for example, zeta is positive, if zeta is positive, 540 is non-zero, and this part must vanish. So that means that the this matrix, phi A Z A, has zero eigenvalue, so the determinant must vanish. So if zeta is negative, I can do the same thing with 504 and 504 changing the roles, switching the roles, and again I get the same equation. Okay. I think there is no reason. In some normalization, this is the form of the FI term, FI D term constraint. Appears. What derived? So I believe they derived. Well, they came up with the form of superpotential that gives you. Okay, this constraint, and later I will discuss that, I will argue that this is the right world volume for the bound state of D4 brains.
The idea is that if you differentiate with respect to 504, you get the condition which looks like 580
Yes.
That has two solutions. One solution is the equation that, say, the hypercircle.
Mm-hmm. The other solution is the equation that the... 540 vanishes, yeah. But the D-term constraint... okay, 5... Here, 540 is... okay, here... yeah. Oh, sorry. No, okay, sorry. I don't need trace here, actually. Sorry. Because this is a row vector. This is a column vector. These are just scalars, and this is a matrix. As I was saying, I think derivative is directed to 504, and then this must vanish. Yeah, this must vanish. And if zeta is positive, 540 cannot vanish, and the matrix phi a za must have a zero eigenvalue.
The point is that the moduli space where phi from 0 is equal to 0 is only an additional
Yes. So that arises when zeta is 0, for example. Yes. Okay. No, I one of them non-zero is enough, I think.
We still have to
take derivative with respect. We still have to experiment with respect to large phis and z's. So I believe that kills you. That kills new branch you're talking about. So what I'm getting at is that the moduli space of this gauge theory is now described by these equivalence, the equivalence relations like this and this. So we have the same moduli space as for PRD T4 brains, and there is an additional mod. There is an additional component which corresponds to this hypersurface. Hypersurface given by this equation, determinant of phi z, phi times z is zero. So this part corresponds to the space where the zero brain can move around. This and this describes the moduli space for D4 brains, and this describes the moduli space for D4 brains. Large phi equals zero?
Phi
equals zero. So, if zeta is positive, 540 cannot vanish. Yeah, the value is determined by. Okay, so. The moduli space is now the vibration of this hypersurface around the moduli space for D4 brains. And now I'm going to add several D0 brains, MD0 brains. Yeah, so this is a proposal. I think this is conjectural. But they have an argument that this is the right this is the world volume for the bound state of d4 grains. So if I have time, I will try to explain that.
So the bottom line of all of these analyses is that you want to assume to the condition that the determinant is really equal to zero?
Yes. And also that description of the moduli space. This and this. And the number of moduli. That's the punch line.
If you look at the eigenvalues, some of them are non-zero, then it appears that you are more satisfying the hyperspace condition.
Yeah, but you can come to the
So you're saying that you only want one eigenvalue, and you allow the other eigenvalues to be moduli. So that means that for that case, you will have constants.
Sorry, eigenvalues of what? Okay, fine.
Determinant.
Yes.
One by not eigenvalue by eigenvalue.
So what do you want? This tells that there is at least one eigenvalue.
At least one, and the rest can be non-zero.
This can be non-zero, yes.
So you have a situation which by a zero is non-zero, which is not anymore the equation for the hyperspace.
Well, but this can be. For example, if n is 2, this tells you that so if I define this part to be just phi of z, then this and each of the matrix component matrix elements is a linear polynomial. So this is the equation for the hypersurface. This is going to be the equation for the hypersurface, for the world volume of the bound state of d4 grains.
Are you modifying the equation for the hypersurface?
No. Oh, I mean, yes, also, yes, so. The claim is that we start with d4 grains, several d4 grains, each of them wrapping this basic hypersurface. And then we consider the process of combining these d4 grains into a bound state. And then the bound state will have the world volume described by this equation. So that's the statement. Z is just bad. No. Here, A is summed. A is summed. There is sum over index A. So I think diagonalizing this phi is not a good way to describe a smooth surface. So it's just a polynomial. Okay, it's just a polynomial in Z. This is just a degree n homogeneous polynomial in Z. Yeah, so I extreme classical moduli space. Okay? So. Okay. There is a D-term constraint with Fi parameter, and I restrict to the case where Fi parameter is non-zero, for example, positive. Then this constraint tells you that phi 4-0 cannot vanish. Now, extremize W with respect to phi 0-4. Okay. Okay.
Why is that?
Okay. So yeah, I will talk about that why this is done later. Okay. So yeah, so basically that part is the evidence for this proposal that this case theory describes the quantum mechanics. So let me finish the case with several diesel brains. So then bifundamentals become matrices, and the Z coordinates are also matrices. So I have to take trace. Okay, lambda is also matrix, and also they argue that there is a term which looks like this. Omega ABC is an anti-symmetric tensor which is related to the holomorphic 3 form. And if you do the same analysis, so that is imposing the D-term constraint and extremizing the superpotential, then this gives you the symmetric product or Pn, where Pn is given by this equation. So the whole picture, the picture of the whole moduli space is like this. So this is a moduli space for D4 brains, described by these equivalence relations. And at each point in the moduli space of D4 brains, there is a fiber which is this symmetric product, M symmetric product of Pn, and M symmetric product is the right form for the moduli space for MD0 brains. Yeah, so now I'm going to explain why this is the right geometry for the bound state of D4 brains. Okay, so the claim is that bound state of ND4 brains each wrapping P1 given by this linear equation with this minimal amount of U1 flux. I will talk about it soon. So this has world volume. Pn given by like this vanishing determinant. Here, phi sub A is a constant matrices. Now, what do I mean by this minimal amount of human flux? So this P1 is given by this linear equation and also the quintic equation for the quintic. And this P1 is not spin. It's not a spin manifold. And in order to have a fermion on such a manifold, we have to introduce U1 flux F, which takes value in the half-odd integral cohomology. So in this case, the minimal flux is written as J. Half J, where J is the hyperplane class. So it's a pullback of the hyperplane class from P4 to the quintic. Okay. So I want to explain why this claim is true. And for that, I have to consider charge conservation. And I will restrict to the case where n is 2. So just combining two basic defoverance into a bound state. Two defoverance into a bound state. Okay. For each defoverance, so this parenthesis 1 means just considering one defoverance, this half J, and there's a D0 charge, which is given by the trans-Simons coupling. And there is also D2 charge, Now I want to combine two such defoverance. So bound state now has total charges this means two defoverance, which is twice the charge for one defoverance. This and this and these have to be given by the same formula. Where P sub 2 is now the world volume for the bound state, and similarly this is given by P2. And these equations tell you that these equations give you a non-trivial constraint. That is, so this can be reduced to the condition that F has no self-intersection. Also, there is a requirement from supersymmetry that the U1 flux F should be decomposed into F minus plus half J, where F minus satisfies F minus J equals zero. So F minus is orthogonal to J, and also F minus is 1-1 form. These conditions are equivalent to saying that F minus is anti-self dual with respect to the induced metric induced from the Fibonacci study metric of P4. Now, F minus is a 1-1 form. J is also a 1-1 form. And okay, now P2 is a spin manifold, and F is F must be integral. So these conditions tell you that F can be thought of as a Poincaré dual of a divisor. So okay, so this P2, this world volume of the bound state, must admit a divisor, and this cannot be P1. There is a divisor corresponding to J, which is just a hyperplane. There is a corresponding to J, which is hyperplane, but this F cannot be hyperplane because it's F. Let's see. Because if F is proportional to J, then it's inconsistent with this equation. Yeah. Okay, so P2 must admit a divisor which is not J. And this gives you a non-trivial constraint for the complex structure of the world volume P2. Okay, and the claim is that the equation, P2 defined by this equation indeed admits such a divisor. So, a divisor that satisfies, that has these intersection numbers. Okay, so I think that's a detail, so I will not describe that. But this is the logic. Okay, so they proposed a Cuiva gauge theory describing the black hole obtained by wrapping D4 brains and D0 brains. And the evidence for that is that the gauge theory gives you the moduli space that describes the right world volume of the bound state of D4 brains. And the moduli space can be used to compute the entropy of the black hole. Yeah, I think that's all I want to say. Thank you.